Audrey McGibbon is my guest, and we're talking about social anxiety and how it correlates to perfectionism, and then how that flows on into your workplace. But tell us, what is the link between perfectionism and social anxiety, if there is one?
There is. They are strongly associated. I mean, the link is just that they're both forms of anxiety.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Or at least there's a strong anxious component of perfectionistic people. So it's fear. So going back to that kind of, what's your brain telling you?
Okay. They're frightened that they're being judged all the time. But that is often sort of exported onto other people somehow, isn't it?
Certainly, and those who are socially anxious, the fear of not being good enough that might, in a perfectionist, only manifest in, I don't know, in the quality of a report that they're writing or an app that they're designing. It might be perfectionistic there, but they may not have that in a social setting.
Okay.
But in a social setting, it's about not being good enough, notwithstanding the scrutiny of your social interactions. It might even be something like, I don't know, how your accent or how you eat, really quite personal things that you're more anxious about being judged on.
Almost like compulsions that you might have about, you know, perfectionism about your body, your weight, your diet, your all of those things. But in a workplace, how does social anxiety penetrate? Because sometimes people can come across as real pains in the ass, and then you find out they're really anxious and you have to feel sorry for them, but you still want to push them off a cliff. How do you deal with that?
It'll probably work with some of those people, George, around their tolerance to the acceptance of other people, but maybe that's a conversation for another day.
I'm a fairly intolerant person, as you can tell. No, but you know,
I'm not implying otherwise.
But yeah, I think some people can be really snitchety and prickly, and they often get themselves into positions of leadership, and they're very socially awkward. And then, yeah, it's tricky. Well, how do they manifest?
Yeah. Okay. So classically, it manifests more as nerves, and that stuff about you. They will either have that, you know, the telltale flush up their neck that they're red or they're blotchy. They can sound very breathy when they're speaking, and that's not surprising because they're often not really breathing properly.
No.
So there's those sorts of things. But I think what you were getting at was more the person who masks their underlying social insecurities by coming over as, shall we say, more confident or more assertive in their views than others might feel is warranted. And so they can be a bit full of themselves. And so they just their anxiety is leading them to not read the cues rather than not care about the cues. It's probably just that they're a bit, you know, in their heads about how they have to come over to other people.
Oh, okay. So, and people who are often in leadership, I find, who I don't know if they're trying to get people to do something and they don't know how to, or they don't trust that they will be followed, because, you know, it's that difference, I suppose, between authority and power. Do you know what I'm saying? Like people who come across, they don't gain a natural authority because they're calm and measured and, you know, they're not reactive. They sort of have to assert power because they're feeling threatened or something.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot going on there, but I'm reminded of, you know, when you opened this section around, you know, the world's full on and constantly changing. And we certainly know that when people are feeling out of sorts and there's all this ambiguity and uncertainty around, essentially their capacity to process or care about whatever anybody else is telling them, so whatever the strategy is or the great new idea, if they're sensing in their anxious heads, oh my God, I'm going to be picked on to stand up and speak about this, or what does this mean for my job? So one being a social anxiety and the other being an insecurity about income or jobs. As soon as they're starting to do that, they're not listening to the content of the great new idea or the strategy. And so the leader, really the guidance we would give, is show that you care before they will care what you know.
Okay, so tell me that again. Show that you care.
A leader has to show that they care before their people will care what the leader knows.
Okay, so having knowledge or affinity with a product or a platform or a client. None of that will matter if your staff don't think you care about them.
Particularly in times of stress and uncertainty. So, I think in BA, if there is such a thing as a BAU, and, we're just trundling along nicely, then that's okay for leaders to cut straight to the chase and go to the task. In fact, often it can be a source of amusement or cynicism when leaders make an overt play for, how's everyone today, when it is just a sort of fairly standard day. So it's about being able to switch it up and read the play. But if you've got some big news or you want people to shift gears, that's the stage at which you just really have to remember they essentially are not wired to be interested in your big idea until you help them calm the farm and, cool the jets and all those other expressions about just help them settle, help them understand what this might mean for them, help them regain, and that's about giving them some sense of control back. So you might, use some framing techniques. Hey, everyone, I've got some big news to share. I expect some of it, might create natural apprehension. So let me just say at the outset, this is what I can share. This is what I can't. We'll be having follow-up meetings with each of you and then just keep it brief. Because the other thing that we do, I'm probably doing it now, is we just give too much detail.
We over-explain.
Over-explain.
Yeah, and you lose your crowd before you've checked in on how they're – you've got to constantly be checking in with what they're taking on and what they're not, and where – and have such a good rapport with them that they can say, hey, you lost me at the second paragraph. Can we go back? I don't get it. And ask those questions. But the split up workplace, I think having people work from home, a lot of people are finding, some people get very anxious that workers still want to work from home. They take it as a personal affront or they can't watch what they're doing, so they don't trust that the work will be done. It has brought up a lot of these issues within leadership.
It has, and it is a real handful for, imagine if you're trying to do sort of what used to be called a town hall, but you've got, X percent of the people in the room and X percent of the people are online. Yeah. And of the people who are online, X percent have got their cameras off. And, even something like social anxiety, there's some research coming through, which I think is quite interesting, that shows when we have anonymity, what we might usually experience as being sort of inhibited or socially anxious. If we're guaranteed to have anonymity, as you might know, public figure, if you get trolled or
people
whatever,
give me heaps of shit online. Because they think you can't find out where they live, but I can. Look, thank you so much for joining me today, Audrey McGibbon, talking about social anxiety, the rate of change, and some of the methods of calming your farm. Lovely to chat to you.
Cheers, George. Take care.